always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
Hello and welcome to Columbo and Katie on a Thursday afternoon, a busy Thursday afternoon, and we have got great guests, but also Katie is back.
I'm here.
How are you?
I'm alive and surviving. I'm surviving.
You want to talk about any of it, or you want to not talk about any of it?
You know, being a parent is beautiful. It's wonderful. It comes with many blessings.
Mm-hmm.
But the untold thing, or maybe it's told and you just don't know until you experience it, is the amount of sickness that happens whenever.
Especially when they start going to daycare, which is just like a petri dish of bacteria.
Maeve did not have to attend daycare until she was one.
Mm-hmm.
And then since attending daycare, which she loves, and it's a great daycare.
Right.
But since she has attended daycare, we have been battling sickness for the last 4 or 5 months. And finally, David and I have been the recipients of the sickness.
Yep.
And so that is what happened yesterday.
It's good for them, though. Like, they need it, right?
But, you know, I was thinking about it yesterday because yesterday was a hard day. And again, Maeve is everything to me. She's my world. But that doesn't negate the fact that when there is a sickness in the household and it is like everyone is sick,
mm-hmm.
you are tunnel visioning. You are just like, mm-hmm. We have to get to the end of it, and we're going to get to the end of it. But right now I feel like I am sucked in a tornado that has somehow also turned into a tsunami. And you've talked about it before when you and Christine and Grace all had the stomach flu.
Oh,
it's just
on
like,
Christmas.
How, like, we have to keep going. How do we keep going?
On Christmas, we all had it at the same time. She was a baby. This one, Grace, was a baby, like a baby, 6 months old, maybe. And the baby's throwing up. I'm throwing up. Christine's throwing up. It was
chaos.
It was so bad. It was so bad. I remember my mom coming over, like, to give us some relief and help with the baby. And she walked in the door and she was like, whoa. What is going on in here? It's like you can feel that, the atmosphere. You can feel it in the air.
There was a shift. There was a monumental shift when I walked through the door.
Yeah.
And it's all of the things that people can tell you. And then when you're in it, you're like, oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Well, you take care of yourself, take care of your family, and if you guys need another day off, we can hold down the ship, of course.
Thank you.
Got lots of people to talk to today. We're going to talk to Dr. Randy Tobler in a little less than an hour, just after 3 o'clock, as we do every Thursday. Also every Thursday, we talk to Missouri State Representative Justin Sparks, and he will be joining us here in just about 10 minutes. Also today, in about a half an hour, at about 2:45, we're going to be joined by the Attorney General of the State of Missouri. Andrew Bailey will be joining us, and I'm so excited to talk to the Attorney General because, you know, this Hazelwood East situation hits really close to home for me, being a lifelong, until a year ago, you know, from the day I was born until we moved to St. Peter's last year, I was born, raised, went to school in North County in the Hazelwood School District. My dad graduated from Hazelwood. I graduated from Hazelwood. My oldest, Grace, who we're just talking about, graduated from Hazelwood. So this hits close to home for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking forward to talking to the Attorney General about his investigation, about the backlash that he has received from the Hazelwood School District, and all of it. So looking forward to talking to the Attorney General of the State of Missouri, Andrew Bailey, at about 2:45 this afternoon. I want to start with something that I saw... I just kind of stumbled across a little bit before the show. I want to play the Joe Rogan clip here in a second, Katie. And I just stumbled across this clip of Joe Rogan talking about Karine Jean-Pierre. And it really, like, it really put a spotlight in my mind about just how awful. And I know this is no surprise to anybody. I know this is not breaking news or like some big epiphany, but just how bad Karine Jean-Pierre has been as press secretary.
Mm-hmm.
There has never, I can't remember a single time where there was a good story or a positive story or a defensible story about KJP, even from the liberal perspective. Like, even, I get it from me, of course not, right?
Right.
And us, of course, there's not going to be any positive stories. But, like, people like Jen Psaki, you know, like, Democrats loved Jen Psaki mm-hmm. because she was a fighter. She defended the president tooth and nail. She backed it up. She had some credibility, you know, in her answers. You don't get any of that with Karine Jean-Pierre.
No, you don't.
It's just been nothing but a circus.
Oh, yeah. Sloppy.
An S show mm-hmm. since she has taken over. And it was perfect timing because this week, in fact, I haven't talked about this story, but it's been in the headlines. Karine Jean-Pierre has been in the headlines this week for hanging up on a radio interview. Did you see any of this story?
I don't think you did.
It was an interview that the White House requested. So they're the ones that requested from this North Carolina radio station. I don't know how you get on that list,
mm-hmm.
the list of the White House calling you for interviews. But anyway, they called them. They wanted to talk to them. So Karine Jean-Pierre comes on. The host asks a question about Biden's mental health. He uses the word dementia in the question, and that set her off.
Ooh.
She said it was insulting that he would, you know, say that. And then she didn't answer that question. She just was angry that he asked it and said, let's move on. He asks one more question. She answers it, and then she's out.
But she actually hangs up.
Complete with the busy tone on the air sound, you know, that you get when somebody hangs up.
Oh, and, yeah.
But she answered the question, and then she said, like, she answered the question. It was like, you know, blah, 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 Katie, now you have a nice day. Womp, 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 womp. So the White House said, no, she didn't hang up.
Oh.
You get 7 minutes. You knew that. Everybody gets 7 minutes. Your 7 minutes was up, so she moved on to the next interview just like she does every other time.
Hmm.
No. So she's in the headlines already this week for that. And then I see this Joe Rogan clip today. And I thought that Joe Rogan and his guest just absolutely summed it up perfectly. We had to do a little editing because it's Joe Rogan. But I wanted to play this real quick. Go ahead.
It is interesting that he's so frail that he's transparent. Right. And he's so transparent to the point where the White House press secretary accidentally tweeted as him from her account. You saw that.
Yeah.
Right. Which is wonderful. I love when that happens because it's like, thank you. I was wondering. And now I know. You know, I was really confused. I kind of had a feeling it was you, you know, and. But is there ever been a worse White House press secretary? How did she get that job? She's so bad at convincing people. There's a bunch of like hardcore ideologically driven left wing pundits that are on YouTube that could do a way better job, and they would be psycho about it. Yeah. They would be psycho about it, and the left would be like, yeah. Like she's not the one. Yeah. Like she's terrible at it. She gets called out for stuff all the time. She gets set up for stuff all the time. Like Peter Ducey's always setting her up. He talks to her.
Ducey's amazing.
He's so good. He'll provide a little bit of this, but then what about that?
Yeah.
And, you know, she's just awful at it.
And she's only really challenged by one person.
Right.
In the briefing room and still manages to bungle it on the daily.
Well, it's just there's so much madness that she has to, like, cover up.
It's what, and look, this is again a kind of brass tacks way of talking about it, but it's what happens when you put identity over competence.
Yeah.
Everyone knows, like, explicitly, and then when you hire someone, it's a big celebration of all the different intersectional identities the candidate has.
Yeah.
You know, this is our first, you know, black female, I don't know, LGBTQ, not really sure.
Yeah.
And so. The problem with that, though, is when you're not making a decision based on competence, merit, excellence, you're buying into it at the front end on that different hierarchy of decision making. But then on the back end, you can't do anything about it. You say, well, you elevated this person for identity. You can't fire that person because of incompetence.
Identity over competence. I mean, we all know that, right? But it's just really, I thought that was a really perfect way to explain it. I also thought it was really interesting to hear him, to hear Joe Rogan say, and he's so right, that there are progressive YouTubers that could do a better job of representing the White House than Karine Jean-Pierre. And he, like he said, that Democrats would be going, yeah,
get him. I don't think I've ever heard someone lay it out in such a way that it was that clear. Joe Rogan's guest laid out exactly what I feel like we have all been feeling but weren't able to completely verbalize. And that is, we are measuring everything in this Democrat Party, but specifically this White House, is measured by identity. And what he points out is, if that is the supreme being, if identity is the supreme thing that we hold in the highest regard, then competence and morality and successfulness, all of those other things fall to the wayside and they become secondary. And then you get something like this, where you can't fire someone because they are incompetent, because you set that up for it to be secondary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was like, listening to this clip, I was like, boom, mm-hmm. This is exactly the explanation that we need to be broadcasting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always think it carries a little more weight when somebody who is not a political person, not a news person, when they see a situation happening and they can understand it and articulate it so perfectly. Joe Rogan has gotten political here recently. He's right. Been sort of drug into politics.
Yeah, thrown into it.
In some ways, like, you know, both sides have tried to, you know, latch on to, you know, when he says something that progressives like when he was interviewing Bernie Sanders and said he would vote for Bernie Sanders, you know, that was, the Democrats loved that, progressives loved that. And then, you know, when he went through his whole COVID thing and he was so outspoken against the government, against that, you know, all of a sudden all the Republicans loved him. But Joe Rogan has not until recently been a political figure in any way. And he's not somebody who claims to or does a whole lot of, you know, breaking down of news stories or politics. So when somebody that's not in that world, it's like when Grace comes to me, my 20-year-old daughter, when she'll ask me about a particular story and she'll say, hey, what is going on with Joe Biden in this situation? And she could just nail exactly what's going on and see right through the lies, mm-hmm. and see what's going on.
You're like,
and,
whoa.
Yeah. That always carries more weight to me than a political pundit explaining something.
Yeah.
Because when it's breaking through, when it's so obvious to people that don't do this for a living, then that really means that is spreading across voters. And, you know, when people that don't do this for a living see, you know, are exposing how bad things are, it just means more. It carries more weight than a political pundit.
I think that that's completely correct, because there is some type of innocence to them making these kind of discoveries because they aren't ingrained into this political system. I also think that there is something so beautiful about watching someone completely change their mind and allowing someone to change their mind. And that is the progression we've seen with Joe Rogan. That's the progression we've seen with Bill Maher. That's the progression we've seen with Elon Musk. It's funny that all of these people are going totally to the more conservatives, like center right, I would say, than what we've seen before. But right now we're seeing big wigs in podcasting, in social media, in comedy, all having this light bulb moment where America is watching them change their mind. And how often do we see people do that and not be apologetic about it and not have to say, oh, I'm sorry. You know, they're like, I was wrong. I thought one way and now I think something different. So I think, Tony, to your point, there's a lot of innocence, mm-hmm. around being like, this person isn't this political savant, mm-hmm. or, you know, legally. And they're also completely changing their thought process right in front of our eyes.
Yeah. Or I think in many cases they are learning, you know, being forced to be engaged in this because, you know, in Joe Rogan's case, he's either being attacked by the right or the left. So he's kind of forced into it. But, and then you, you know, you, dig into what's happening in this world and you learn a little bit more and maybe you change your mind. But I think also a lot of people, like especially like a Bill Maher type, he didn't change his mind.
Right.
He just stayed still. Yeah. And everybody moved to the left.
Yeah.
Like massively to the left. And all of a sudden where he was standing isn't so far on the left anymore. Now he's more in the middle or even on the or slightly on the right on some things. And he never moved. It's just the party has gone so crazy left that
they left people.
Yeah, they left people behind.
They left people behind.
Yeah. I don't know. Joe Rogan, maybe he's changed his beliefs a little bit. But I think a lot of people have just they're standing there going, you know, people that are traditionally Democrat voters standing there going, I haven't changed my beliefs at all.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I find myself.
It looks more
at odds with the Democrats. Yeah,
yeah.
Because they've gone so far left.
Right.
Like, wait a minute. If I don't think boys should be playing girls sports, then I'm a Republican. How did this happen?
Right. They're like, probably thinking the same thing. Like, you know? Huh?
Like, how did I didn't change, but all of a sudden my party's so far to the left that I don't fit in anymore.
Do you think conversations, I mean, we always talk about how important radio is because it's our profession, but also because mm-hmm. we've just discovered how much people love to have these long form kind of conversations. Do you think that this shift, especially in the election of 2024, conversations like you and I have on the show or that Joe Rogan is having with his guests, those are being listened to much more than what you would see with traditional cable news or just TV shows, local news in general?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that?
Yeah. And people need, I'm glad you brought that up about radio too, because radio is still the number one media consumed by Americans. Yeah. More than TV, more than podcast, streaming, anything. And
we can still have a conversation.
Yeah. And we can go. Yeah. And we allow ourselves to have that conversation. We allow ourselves to go deeper into topics. And you can't just, you know, guests can go on television shows and they can have 2 minutes of an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Like they know that I've got 2 good minutes of where I can make my case. But if I get pushed any further than that, I might fall apart.
Yeah.
And then when we, you know, you only get those bullet point snapshots so
right.
often when you're watching television or news broadasts, whereas here you're forced to defend your position and
yeah.
explain yourself.
I think that's
where important.
People have now gone away from the talking points and the bullet points and the things that they've heard from the party traditionally. And are now more focused on, like, what does the conversation actually mean and where can I find that conversation?
Well, we're going to have those conversations today. As I mentioned, Dr. Randy Tobler joins us at 3 o'clock. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey joins us at about 2:45. And Missouri State Representative Justin Sparks joins us next on Columbo and Katie.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Welcome back to Columbo and Katie on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Tony Columbo here with my partner Katie Fitzpatrick in studio, and joining us on the line as he does every Thursday at this time is Missouri State Representative Justin Sparks. Mr. Representative, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. It's happy to be back.
Yeah, and we are just wrapping up your first week back from spring break. Only 7 weeks now, I believe, left in the Missouri legislative session. This is kind of when the clock starts ticking and things start happening. I do have some specific issues that I wanted to talk to you about, but I just wanted to first ask you about, this period of the session. Am I correct in my assumption that we will start to see some headlines and some movement over the next few weeks as the deadline of the end of the session approaches?
Nope, you're exactly right. This is when 9 months of work gets done in 3 weeks. And you're going to see a great deal being done. We actually started that process this week, just churning out an incredible amount of work and bills through the legislative process. So I was happy to see that.
So there's been multiple issues in the headlines this week. Let's start with control of the St. Louis Police Department. This has been an issue. We talked yesterday. If you missed the conversation, recommend everybody go back and make sure you're subscribed to the podcast. We talked about some of this and kind of the history of this issue when we had Rodney Boyd on with us yesterday, because this is something that's gone back and forth. It's been voted on. It's been ruled on. And it still continues to be an issue that we're dealing with here in our area. Missouri lawmakers this week debated the bill 1481, which is sponsored by St. Louis County Republican Brad Crist. And this would be something that would once again bring the police department under state control. I want to know what you think about this issue, not only as a lawmaker, but as a former police officer. You have a lot of experience and a lot of skin in the game when it comes to this issue. So I'd love to get your thoughts.
Absolutely. You know, I filed this bill along with Brad, Representative Chris, last year, and I supported his bill this year as the main carrier, and I spoke on the floor in support of his bill, and wanted really to bring the narrative and the entire debate back to why we're actually having to do this. Number one, the police officers are asking for it. The citizens are asking for it. The Fraternal Order of Police is asking for it. The Ethical Society of Police is asking for it and in full support. So what you have is the rank and file, black, white, and everybody in between, asking and desperately calling for this in order to do what? Remove one step of the political influence of the mayor's office in the city of St. Louis from the inner workings of the police department. She has demonstrated over and over again the lack of will and the lack of ability to actually perform her duties when it comes to the running of a police department. So what the police officers need is they need proper training, proper equipment, proper funding. And why we're actually here is because of horribly short-sighted, stupid policies of defund the police, of which the mayor and her cohorts supported, and now, to their eternal shame and regret, they've stepped away. Good for them. They've stepped away from those policies, but the damage is already done.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the history of the way that it has been ran, because I, for one, even if they get it wrong, even if they make a mistake, when the voters vote something into place, you know, for me, I don't want to see that reversed or turned over unless there's really good reason or a new development, a new reason to do so. And as I mentioned, the history of this issue, it was under state control, but it was voters that put this system in place that has given control to the mayor and the city of the police department. And I'm glad that you are pointing out that it's not that we're overturning the will of the people. We've seen what life is like. The police officers have seen, and the citizens have seen what life is like under that decision, and they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, so it's time to make another change. Is that a fair assessment of the situation?
That's right. Everybody forgets that when we'll call it an experiment because that's what it was, certain benchmarks were put into place, and by every metric, those benchmarks have not been made, and they have failed. So what that means is crime is higher, the police department is underfunded, morale is lower, the officers are fleeing. See what I mean? All of these things that were supposed to, good things that were supposed to happen, morale was supposed to go up, crime was supposed to go down, better running, better functioning administration of the police department, by all metrics, not some, by all metrics have failed. That's why we are beholden. We must do something. It would be irresponsible of us not to.
Another issue that made headlines this week had to do with the ID, Missouri IDs, and adding on to the IDs the citizenship designation, letting people know simply by a mark on your driver's license whether or not you are a citizen of the United States or not. Doesn't seem like a very controversial thing to me, but of course, everything regarding immigration is controversial. What's the situation with that bill, and where do we stand on it at this moment?
Yeah, what a great point, Tony. A controversial bill that has no controversy. What we saw in, I believe it was the district court in Washington, D.C., federal court that upheld a Washington, D.C. law allowing illegal immigrants to run for municipal office. Yet another reason that it's important for us to distinguish who may vote and when they can vote in our elections. Because does this really need to be stated again how important elections are, who runs our local government? How important it is that we have our citizens, our United States citizens, voting for these elections and being able to adequately identify who is a citizen is completely appropriate. But yet, here we are.
Yeah, here we are. And my opinion is, if we don't stop it now, if we don't make these types of things happen, if we don't make our voices heard, it's going to be too out of control to stop it going forward, because the path is clear. In my opinion, the path is clear where the White House, progressives, the left are going. I did a story last week about a federal judge making the ruling that an illegal immigrant had Second Amendment rights. And if you have if you make the argument and you prove that an illegal immigrant has Second Amendment rights, then they have all of the rights in the Constitution. That is opening the door to saying, well, if they have all the rights of the Constitution, then they have a right to vote just like everybody else. It's a dangerous path to be on. And I feel like, you know, if we don't act on these issues now, it'll be too far down the road to control in the future. Am I overblowing it?
Not at all. This is the battle that we have to have. It needs to be waged and fought in every quarter of our country, every state, every county, every city. You know, it's not that if a former policeman and current legislator on the state level can see a horrible decision by a judge is unconstitutional, I am hopeful that that decision will be overturned. That's not the problem. The problem is that an actual judge wrote that opinion in the first place. That's why the battle has to be addressed. That's why it has to be called out. That's why it has to be fought. And we can't give up. We can't give in, not for one moment. This is how important this is. We're talking about the fundamental transformation of our nation.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Talking to Missouri State Representative Justin Sparks, another bill that was making headlines this week, and this is a big one, of course, education, school reform is a huge issue in this election year. And there's this huge package that was approved by the Senate this week that would change how state money is allocated to public schools. There's some wins in here for Democrats. There's some wins in here for Republicans. There's a whole lot in this bill. I was wondering if you could just sort of, you don't need to break down the whole thing to us, for the sake of time. But if you could sort of explain this in layman's terms and whether or not this is a good thing or a bad thing that this massive package is moving forward.
Well, you're exactly right. There's good stuff and there's bad stuff. There is, and in my opinion, the good stuff outweighs the bad stuff. It's a very simple metric that I'm going by, because what this does is expand school choice. This is a vote for school choice, and it expands school choice statewide. That's a huge win. And yes, it does certain things that I'm not a huge fan of, but in my opinion, when we're talking about how important it is to let the dollars follow the child and to actually reach down and give some of these families relief from where they have been mandated by the government that they must go and they don't have other options, I think it's that important. And so I'm happy to support it going forward. It's certainly not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but there are good things in there that are not necessarily Republican or Democrat issues, like minimum teacher pay. You know, we take it for granted in so many of our urban areas and our urban school districts that our teachers make good amounts of money, certainly not enough sometimes, right? Especially for the jobs that they do. But in rural districts, sometimes they're making $22,000, $24,000 a year. And as you know, in 2024, it's hard to make a living on that. So boosting some of that minimum teacher pay, I think, is appropriate.
Yeah, I like the expansion of the voucher system. I like the expansion of the possibility of charter schools. The funding not tied strictly into attendance alone, but there's some other yep. factors into that. I think that makes a whole yep. lot of sense. So it's good stuff. Now I want to get into a couple more things before we run out of time, but on these issues, on this school issue, the ID situation, are you feeling good that a lot of these bills that you are supporting are going to actually get across the finish line? Do you feel like the momentum is at your back right now?
I am. I'm really hopeful because these are GOP platform priority bills, and they are moving, and they're being passed in the House, and they're being passed in the Senate. And as is always the case, we're going to be going to conference committee and trying to come up with a good solution that we can all agree on to go to the governor's desk. And to see so many priorities moving, I think is really a testament to the people, having their voice heard. And I've been proud to be part of the Freedom Caucus in order to take their voices and amplify it so that leadership on both sides of the building understand that we are going to keep focusing on these major platform priorities. School choice is a platform priority. And IP, initiative petition reform, is a platform priority. These things, in my opinion, should have been done a long time ago. So in order for us to be a voice for the people and make sure that their voice can be heard, I'm actually really, really excited and proud to be a part of that effort.
Justin, I did want to ask you one national thing before we let you go, and that is about the wake of the New York officer, the New York City police officer that's happening today. We see that Donald Trump went to this wake. We see that he has spoken now, talking about attending, sending condolences to the family members, meeting everybody, but we don't see representation from Joe Biden. What does that say to someone like you who worked in law enforcement for so long previously? What does that speak to people that are police officers right now in New York?
Yeah, well, what it says is that Joe Biden sides with the criminals, not the police. He sides with those that break the law instead of those that uphold it. And the fact that, you know, actions speak louder than words. And when you're talking about a Donald Trump who has plenty of words for everybody on every topic, doesn't say anything, but he does show up for that widow, I think that says everything about the race that's coming in November.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And actually, we might get into that story. There was a the police union down there sent a very stern letter publicly to local Democrat politicians about the funeral and about wow. not like don't show up for your photo op. Don't pretend yep. like you care about cops. Don't pretend. I mean, these are the words it was using. Don't pretend you're grieving wow. for a photo right. op. We don't want you here. You're not welcome at this. Now, that was to local. It wasn't to Biden, but and Trump was invited. So, yeah, I mean, that just shows yeah, you where
it's got to be yeah. across the board, though. I I'm sorry for cutting you off.
No, you're fine. So no, you're this. Fine. No, please.
Because going back to when I was a policeman for all those years, and you would see the people, the Cori Bushes of the world, show up to policemen's funerals. And all of a sudden now want to stand for the photo op with the grieving widow. It's garbage. Do you know what I need you to do? I need you to vote. I need you to support the police when it's not convenient, when it doesn't do anything for your career. I need you to take the hard stances against those in your party that say defund the police and demonize an entire institution and profession. That's what matters. That's what counts. And for far too long, leadership and police departments around the country have been silent. And for far too long, police associations have tried to get along and play nice. Those days are over. Don't show up. I'm glad and heartened to see people finally speaking out and speaking the truth.
Yes, I couldn't agree more, and I hope they continue to speak out and speak the truth as we go through this important election season. Missouri State Representative Justin Sparks, as always, appreciate your time. You can hear Justin every Thursday with us here on Columbo and Katie. In the meantime, remind folks how they can keep up with everything you're working on.
Justin M. Sparks on Facebook, Sparks for Missouri on Instagram, and SparksForMissouri.com. Happy Easter, guys.
Yes, happy Easter to you, and thanks for everything, and have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much. That is Missouri State Representative Justin Sparks. And we're going to continue the conversation. Some Missouri politics, Missouri issues, including the latest into the investigation and the terrible tragedy, the fight that happened at Hazelwood East. Also, we are going to talk about a new bill. The state of Missouri has teamed up with Kansas and several other states to file a lawsuit against President Biden's latest attempt at student loan forgiveness. We're going to talk to the man at the center of all of that. The Attorney General of the state of Missouri, Andrew Bailey, joins us next on Columbo and Katie.
So fine that I really want to make you mine. I said, so fine that I really want to make you mine.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Welcome back to Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL. Big thanks again to Missouri State Representative Justin Sparks for joining us in that last segment. Great conversation with him, and we're going to continue the conversation. Important stuff happening in Missouri politics, and joining us now back on the show with us is the Attorney General of the state of Missouri. Attorney General Andrew Bailey is with us. Mr. Attorney General, always appreciate your time, sir. How are you today?
Hey, doing well. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, you bet. I was talking about this. I've talked about this story multiple times, and again earlier today, promoting the fact that you were going to be here. But I moved to St. Peter's a year ago. Before that, 45-year lifelong resident of North County. Graduated from the Hazelwood School District. My dad graduated from Hazelwood. I graduated from Hazelwood. My oldest daughter graduated from Hazelwood. So what is happening at Hazelwood East hits very close to home for me. And I love that you are getting involved, because there's obviously a lot of issues for the families and the students and the parents in that area. So I wanted to start right there with you, because it's been in the news a lot this week. Letters going back and forth from your office and the school district. If you could just let us know the latest on your investigation into that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's be clear here. You know, the Hazelwood School District has historically promoted a racially divisive DEI program. And in their DEI statement, they say that uniformed law enforcement officers are scary to certain ethnic groups, and thus they make negative aspersions against law enforcement, and it have historically promoted DEI programs instead of having safety resource officers, uniformed law enforcement officers, in the school district, in the school buildings. And those SROs are a really critical piece of the juvenile justice system, because they can act as an early warning sign when teens are having conflict. Oftentimes, the SROs will be able to detect that, investigate it, and call the juvenile officers and get resources in place to mitigate against the escalation of violence that we saw at the fight where the young woman, her head was bludgeoned several times, resulting in a first-degree assault. And let's be clear, that fight took place in broad daylight on a public street, you know, in close proximity to the school where these teens were students, and there were multiple teens involved. That kind of conflict that rises to that level doesn't happen overnight. There was an escalation in violence. If the SROs had been there, potentially they could have detected that. Regardless, this school needs to be held accountable for these racially divisive DEI programs. The state of Missouri, and under our federal constitution, we are all equal under the law. And how dare these racist policies tell ethnic minority groups that they're not good enough to make it on their own? Why are we lowering the standard or trying to promote one race over another? That's insulting to the minority groups for the school district to say, you're not smart enough, you're not good enough, we have to lower the standard to try to help you out.
Yeah, you are so right. You nailed it so much. And I should have said this at the beginning, that the number one reason that we moved, we still have two younger kids. So our oldest daughter is out of school and into college now, but we still have two younger kids that are in public school. And we had to make that decision. Are we going to stay here, and are we going to stay in the Hazelwood School District, or are we going to, do we need to make a change? And it was the number one reason that we changed. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because part of the letter that was sent to your office from the school district talked about how, oh, well, if there were security resources officers. It wouldn't have done anything because it was a quarter mile away or eighth a mile away from campus, and they wouldn't have been there. But as you just so rightfully explained, and I think this is what people really need to understand about the situation, and us parents know this, it's the culture. It's the culture that's been taught and been brought up and been instilled in that school district that allows it to get to a point where these tragedies happen. It maybe a school resource officer wouldn't have been right there had they been in the building, but maybe that culture doesn't exist if the school district is doing other things. Is that a fair assessment of the situation, in your opinion?
I think that's absolutely fair. And again, that's why this investigation is so important. We're going to drill down on exactly what this DEI program does and who's being impacted. And if we have to file a lawsuit, that's what we're going to do. And we're not going to let the school district stonewall us. They owe it to the parents to explain what happened here, what went wrong, and where the system failures occurred. Why would they not want to turn those documents over? What are they hiding? They're supposed to be a public governmental body that is subject to open records laws, and they're not going to be able to evade this investigation by stonewalling the attorney general's office just because they don't like me. And at the end of the day, it is a parental rights issue. You know, these school districts are there to educate children, not indoctrinate children. And I think we need to take a close, hard look at what kind of harm we're doing when we're indoctrinating children with the idea that America and our society, and Missouri in particular, are quote unquote systemically racist. I am tired of hearing that commentary, and that is exactly the kind of diatribe you get from the DEI statement from the Hazelwood School District. That is racist, and it is unfair, and it paints a bad picture about what we've done as a nation. And again, if they're lowering standards to support certain groups, that's insulting to those groups, and it's disadvantaging other groups, and that violates both the Constitution and Missouri law.
Are you getting completely stonewalled from the district with your investigation? Are they cooperating at all, or are they completely opposed to what you're doing?
Well, they attempted to stonewall and sent a letter saying, we're not turning over any records. And we sent them a letter saying, yes, you are. And so they said, okay, fine. We'll get you the records by April 15th. So we are waiting to receive those records, and we will look at it, and we will determine what further action needs to be taken. But at the end of the day, we're going to hold wrongdoers accountable, and we are not going to let these schools indoctrinate the student body with racist programming, racially divisive programming, and especially not when it disadvantages certain groups to the advantage of others.
Well, count me in as one of the thousands of parents that are very much looking forward to the what you find and the results of that investigation. And we'll obviously continue to keep everyone up to speed on that, and hope to talk to you about that as this all unfolds. We're talking to Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. I wanted to ask you, while we have just a couple minutes left here, about another issue that you are working on that's in headlines today. Missouri and Kansas and several other states have teamed up to file a lawsuit against President Biden's latest attempt at student loan forgiveness. Can you give us a quick explanation of what Missouri, Kansas, and some other states are doing to try to combat this unconstitutional push that President Biden continues to put on all of us?
Well, absolutely. Look, we're not going to let Joe Biden saddle working Missouri families with Ivy League debt. As someone who went to school on an Army ROTC scholarship and went to law school on the post 9/11 GI Bill, this is personal for me. There's nothing free in the world. I paid for my school in blood, sweat, and tears and service to my nation. It was a privilege to get to do that. There are working families out there who didn't get to go to college because they couldn't afford it. So people who took out loans to go to college need to repay back those loans. The previous plan that President Biden put forward that we ended up defeating at the United States Supreme Court last year, that plan would cost Missouri taxpayers $44 million in lost revenue to the state of Missouri. So there's a direct cost to the state of Missouri. Certainly the Supreme Court affirmed in the previous suit that Missouri has standing to file suit against this kind of illegal and unconstitutional behavior from the Biden administration. And we're not going to let Joe Biden pervert the rule of law. Look, at the end of the day, our Constitution gives Congress the power to appropriate money, not the president. And so he needs to get a bill through Congress, and he knows that. He tried and failed, and it was after he failed to get a bill through Congress that he tried the first student loan, quote-unquote, cancellation program. And your listeners out there, any of them who are working families or who are small business owners, will tell you directly, there's no such thing as a debt cancellation. Somebody's paying off that debt.
Yeah, amen.
That's not a real thing.
Yeah.
And so we're gonna put a stop to it. We've already defeated Joe Biden on this once. We'll do it again.
Couple minutes left here with the Attorney General, Andrew Bailey, of the state of Missouri, and I got to ask you about your one more suit, the one that we are one of many that are a part of, the big tech censorship, the case that started with Eric Schmidt, and we are victims here at News Talk STL of that exact thing, and we're proud to have submitted some of the information and be a part of that case. Can you give us an update on that situation, sir?
Yeah, we were just at the United States Supreme Court, I believe, last week on that, and we were able to argue that case. I think ultimately we're going to be successful. These are the worst First Amendment violations in this nation's history. The federal government under the Biden administration suppressed conservative speech exclusively, tried to eliminate one viewpoint from public discourse through a censorship regime on big tech social media platforms. We know you guys were direct victims, but look, everyone in the state of Missouri has been victimized by this because of the lack of access to information, and the harms are ongoing. People are less likely to talk about the best president in the history of the United States, President Donald Trump, or less likely to talk about COVID tyranny or border security or election integrity because they're afraid of getting booted off big tech social media because Joe Biden and Big Brother might not like what they're saying. That's why this case is so important. We've got to build a wall of separation between tech and state to protect our First Amendment right to free speech. This lawsuit's how we're going to do it. I think we're going to be successful.
Yeah, a lot of great stuff. Really appreciate your time and updating us up on all these important issues. Hope to get you back on again really soon. In the meantime, if people want to keep up with what you and your office are working on, what are the best ways to do so? Social media, websites, all that good stuff.
Yeah, check us out at ago.mo.gov. You'll see links to both our X account and our Facebook account. You can follow the 31 lawsuits we've got against the Biden administration. You got a consumer complaint, you've been defrauded by a deceptive business practice, file a complaint online or call us at 1-800-392-8222. We're there to protect working Missouri families.
Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, as always, thanks for your time. Look forward to talking to you again soon, and keep up the good fight. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys. All the best to
you
listening.
Yeah, thank you so much. Great stuff there, man. Rapid fire some
he's doing
important
it.
Stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on, and it's all super important, and really appreciate the update there from Attorney General Andrew Bailey. All right, we're going to continue the conversation with Dr. Randy Tobler. He joins us next on Columbo and Katie on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.